Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Roundtable Conversation Series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with members from the CIO Fixed Income team. Joined for this podcast today to close out 2024 by Barry McAlinden, Frank Saleo, as well as Sudeep Mukherjee, though joining us to lead the conversation, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas with UBS CIO, Leslie Falconio. So, Leslie, with that, I'll pass it over to you to lead today's roundtable.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. And yesterday's December 5th, and it's hard to believe that we are at the last month of the year. But I just wanted to just quickly give a recap of the big picture outlook and actually what we were thinking in heading into 2024. I mean, when we entered the year, about a 3.85 in 10-year Treasury yields, we're sitting right now at about a 4.25. You know, and yet we have mostly positive across the board in terms of fixed income because, again, the yields and the income and the compounding income that investors have the ability to earn within the fixed income side, you know, something that we haven't seen in a very long time. So that tailwind to total return, we do think continues into 2025. But in terms of our interest rate outlook, I mean, we had about a 3.80, 3.85, you know, that we had projected for the end of the year that actually, you know, ended up printing much sooner than what we anticipated. So after we had a little bit of soft employment going back to that July and some volatility that we saw in the beginning of August, our level had actually had, you know, was a bit pulled forward. And one of the caveats that we always had in the end of the year was how the election would turn out. And now that we know, we've obviously initially had what we call a large bear steepener, which is interest rates go up, led by the back end moving higher. Our expectation was that this knee-jerk reaction would be not for the long term in terms of the direction of rates. And since that time, we actually saw in November 10-year Treasury yields actually come down about 20, 21 basis points. But our overall outlook remains that we believe that the economy, while slows, you know, GDP remains, you know, above trend growth. I mean, the fourth quarter GDP, Atlanta Fed now is tracking about a 3.1%. We think the consumer remains strong, but a bit more selective. And as, you know, our readers know that we do have a attractive on our equity sector, more of a neutral on fixed income, but not because we believe that interest rates are going to move materially higher in 2025. But frankly, we don't really see them moving materially lower either. Our expectation for 2025 and 10-year Treasury yields is about a 4%. So we're not looking for a tremendous amount of price appreciation. And given the fact that volatility has really come down, you know, since the election, you know, we're not going to get too comfortable with that being a trend over the long term. Because as we know, you know, January 20th, when we have the inauguration, it's, you know, the policies will get a little bit more concrete views in terms of path and implementation. But the data from those policies, you really won't see hit the economy until the second half of 2025. So you're going to have a little bit more volatility, even though we've seen it wane in the short term, and why we continue right now to like the higher quality sectors. And we have some really great people on today that's going to go through some of our outlook, which those that have followed our, you know, year ahead recognize that we have been more lean towards the higher quality. We have been lean towards adding a bit of interest rate risk on as yields have risen, but not going further out than, say, that five-year part of the curve. And we do think that sectors that have experienced headwinds this year, whether it's agency, MBS, and munis, you know, will probably or have the ability to recover in 2025. So with that said, I do want to start off with Sudeep, and, you know, I know that you just did the Muni Market Guide, and you spent, you know, you've been doing munis for, Sudeep, how long? 30 years?
Yeah, quite long.
So he's obviously, so he's quite an expert in that sector, and he's actually done, he has produced some really great material, and the Muni Market Guide that was just published is, you know, a tremendous reference point. So I just want to sort of start with you, Sudeep, and particularly in terms of that muni side, because we have a lot of questions that come in, particularly from our clients. You know, outside of just let's first do your opinion and a recap of 2024 as a whole and how you've seen influences and things change actually since the election, you know, till now.
Excellent, and thank you, Leslie, and thank you very much for the very, very generous introduction. Yeah, the Municipal Market Guide, the year at 2025, was just published. So encourage all our audience to take a look at that. So let me just hit on the highlights for 2024. 2024 was a year of record supply, which was not anticipated at the beginning of the year that it would turn out to be this strong a year for supply. You know, pent-up demand for issuance from the pandemic, you know, generally lower rates, all of that combined to produce a very strong year of supply. And as a result of that, even though the flows were pretty strong, and I'll come to that in a second in November, overall, year-to-date returns have been on the tepid side, so to speak. But everything else but total returns are anything but tepid. You had a tremendous normalization of the curve from deep inversion to an almost near normal looking curve, strong supply balanced by strong flows, and then finally we had a red wave sweep in the elections, and that kind of changed the dynamic a little bit in the muni market. So coming to November, munis have enjoyed a tremendous rally post-election. And it's one of the best performing asset classes within U.S. fixed income, all three segments, taxes and munis, taxable munis, high yield, you name it. Very strong performance in November. That has boosted returns, and munis are now outperforming treasuries. But overall, year-to-date returns still on the tepid side. Which brings me to another important issue that I think Leslie mentioned, fiscal and tax policy. This is central to munis. Has a very strong influence on the municipal market for good reason. And in our year-ahead outlook, we say that, you know, these fiscal and tax policy uncertainties are expected to linger in 2025, especially the first half. Some types of muni bonds may lose their tax exemption, even though there's a lot of rhetoric around that and a lot of material being put by various sources. We feel that the effects will be not be very widespread, and in any case, even if our assessment is not fully correct, existing bonds will be grandfathered. And if that happens, their scarcity value will actually rise. So that's one impact of fiscal and tax policy. Also, we have been hearing about the state and local tax reduction, or SALT as they call it, the deduction cap on will be raised. And that would mean such a lower demand for munis in high tax states. As I think everybody knows, munis are particularly attractive for high income earners in high tax states, where they are a better investment from a yield perspective, tax equivalent yield perspective, compared to, let's say, investment grade corporate bonds. So on the tax and policy side, while there is little doubt that fiscal deficit will be elevated in 2025 and new tariffs will be implemented, we still believe that actual outcomes will be influenced and perhaps moderated by the fiscal hawks in the Republican Party and those who remain somewhat wary of aggressive protectionist measures. So no doubt there is uncertainty there, but we have some moderation dynamics in play there. Let me come to technicals. You know, technicals play a very important role in the short to medium term in munis, which by technicals I mean the balance of demand and supply. We expect 2025 to be another year of strong supply. We're actually estimating tax exempt issuance in excess of $450 billion next year. And this is in continuation of the 2024 theme. Significant pent-up demands for public infrastructure investment is a key driver. And in fact, tax policy uncertainty can actually pull forward issuance in the first half of 2025. So the first half can see a little more volatility than many investors typically expect. Having said that, we also expect inflows to remain strong. We saw one of the strongest inflows in munis in November, and we expect that strength to continue in 2025, and that is supported by the Fed easing cycle. And those two factors, both strong, which should keep demand and supply in balance. Let me add a very quick note on taxables. In contrast to tax exempt, which has seen tremendous supply, taxables continue to have relatively muted supply. Spreads to the U.S. ag are wider since April, but overall tight from a longer-term perspective. So we don't see a compelling value there. One note we should add on taxables is they are a longer-duration asset. So while declining treasury yields would be positive in 2025, we also caution slightly on the rate volatility is a bigger risk here than in taxes and munis. Overall, taxable view, our view remains neutral. But talking about treasuries, I think Leslie alluded to this. We do expect treasury yields to will moderate further in 2025, but we remain cautious of that long end in the near term. And in 2025, we do expect the AAA tax exempt muni curve to bull steepen moderately, that too, but less so than the treasury curve. That combined with our expectation that inflation will continue to dissipate, but remains a risk factor. The reemergence of that remains a risk factor due to tariffs and fiscal deficits. So putting all of that together, the treasury yields and the muni dynamics in terms of positioning, we continue to like the longer end of the intermediate curve in munis, the 12 to 22 year, that is, with special emphasis on the 70 to 22 year band. That we think is the sweet spot given the risk return dynamics here. And the overall effective target portfolio duration being about 6 to 6.5 years. And that's right about where the muni index also is. Finally, credit. This has been a bit of a surprise. The U.S. economy has stayed strong, very robust. Consumer spending has been robust. And that has helped solidify already strong muni credit quality. That being said, we have crossed actually the peak of upward momentum in ratings. So we expect rating upgrades to moderate further in 2025, probably an even split between upgrades and downgrades. Triple Bs remain tight, high yield remains tight. So even though the carry is good in the shorter run, we think that higher quality is the way to go from a relative value perspective. So overall, you know, the key word is strength, and that's the title of our municipal market guide, Strength Amid Policy Uncertainties. So we expect a strong year for munis in 2025, strong supply, strong inflows, but also higher volatility as policy outcomes evolve. So let me stop.
Sudeep, so you would say, I mean, that's really a great summation. And I think that what you're saying is if you have a longer holding period, mm-hmm. right, and if you can sort of go through that volatility, the yields are very attractive today, right?
I mean, yes,
and that's
absolutely
what we're saying. Yeah, and I think that's really an important point. I mean, you know, the volatility that we're going to see next year, obviously, you're going to have the bond vigilantes and those that are concerned about reacceleration of inflation and possibly a slowing labor market, even though we are still looking at the soft landing. But for those who have a longer holding period return, particularly as you mentioned, those longer end maturities, you know, the yield that you're earning, we haven't seen in quite some time.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that is true.
Okay, thank you, Sudeep. And so now I want to switch to the investment grade. And, you know, listen, we've been, as our people who listen to our podcast and read our publications are well aware, we've had a most attractive, if you will, on high quality, which has been the agency MBS and investment grade corporate market, which I know has kept very, very busy and very specializes as well on the financial side, which, you know, we like in the investment grade corporate side and our equity team likes as well. So Barry, I just want to give the same question to you in terms of, you know, this recap of what we've seen in 2024, if there's some certain views have changed after the election and how that might sort of flow into the first part of 25.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. So I think, you know, one of the surprises this year is that the bulk of the return for IG has come from the coupon income. So the average coupon of the index is 4.4%, and the year-to-date total return is 5%. So you've had some modest price appreciation, but not the kind of price appreciation that we were looking for, you know, when we thought that the Treasury, the 10-year was going to go down to 3.85. You know, it did. But, you know, since it's come back, it's that coupon component, which is driving the return. And I think for most of the investment grade corporate investor base, both individuals and institutions, you know, this is quite fine. You know, we invest in investment grade corporate bonds for their higher quality, for a pickup you get over treasuries. And, you know, that pickup has been sufficient for investors this year. Treasuries are only returning about 2.4% this year. So obviously, valuations are a different story in spreads. You know, you're only at like your historical tights now. It's essentially the zero percentile, you know, over really over the past 30 years, you know, since we've been tracking investment grade spreads. But the reason why we still, you know, view it to be attractive in a relative sense is that yield component. So the 5% yield in IG overall, believe it or not, it's, you know, we started this year and the overall yield was 5.1. So, you know, the yield is not too far different. It's obviously traded in quite a range, though. You know, it was as low as 4.7, as high as 5.7. But again, you know, this yield and on a percentile basis is close to the 90th percentile that we witnessed post GFC. So it's this yield, you know, again, combined with spreads that are tight, but yet provide a pickup over government bonds that's going to keep the appeal for IG intact. That's why in CIO's 2025 year ahead outlook, we do have that attractive view. And, you know, we do expect, you know, continuation of similar trends to continue. Obviously, you know, you spoke about potential for volatility in the rates market. I think that will be a main driver of the price fluctuation we see in IG throughout the course of 25, much like was the case in 24. But we do expect spreads to remain tight, you know, and that's really because we would need to see a deterioration in either, you know, issuer fundamentals or supply-demand technicals, I think, you know, in order for spreads to widen out. We don't foresee this, you know, taking place, you know, based on, you know, kind of the known knowns in the marketplace today. I think, you know, I just touch upon fundamentals. Obviously, so much is going to be driven on the macro environment. We have more of a benign macro view in CIO, kind of that low 2% growth, you know, driven by still a healthy consumer, healthy corporate earnings that we think are going to grow in kind of the upper mid-single digits in 25. That lends a great deal of support to issuer fundamentals for corporate bonds. It gives corporate issuers leeway to add more debt to their balance sheets, which we think there's a good chance they'll do, especially as the appetite for M&A picks up based on the election outcome. So, you know, they're not going to be in deleveraging mode. You know, they're going to be more incrementally adding leverage, but doing it selectively. You know, I think certainly, you know, we could see more animal spirits evolve in the marketplace, but we're not expecting it, you know, to be anything, you know, to extreme levels taking place. I think corporates will do it selectively combined with the earnings growth should still make for, you know, a good fundamental environment. And then as it relates to supply-demand technicals, yeah, much like was the case in the municipal side, you know, gross issuance has been very strong this year for investment-grade corporates, looking to tally about $1.5 trillion this year. Similar projections for that the Street has for next year, 1.5 or a little bit higher. I think, you know, when we think about supply, though, you also have to consider net supply. When you think about all the redemptions that are going to be occurring in the marketplace in 25, plus the coupon reinvestment, you know, from this higher coupon level, much more manageable on a net supply basis, much more digestible. So we don't see that really is going to be a headwind. And then demand should persist at these high yield levels. And, you know, in particular, you know, non-U.S. investors, I think some of the foreign currency hedging costs could be dampened a bit. So that looks to be perhaps, you know, another source of demand that could pick up next year. So again, you know, we expect more of the same. I think, you know, expect kind of that mid-single digit type returns, primarily driven by the coupon income. As it relates to, you know, to sectors, we're going to be paying attention, I think, to the three sectors I'll mention quickly look interesting to us, certainly financials. We've had this normalization of spreads, so we don't think spreads on aggregate really are going to outperform the index, but you could see some outperformance in regional banks. I think that's where there's still some additional you know, normalization that could occur as the environment for banks looks to be strong in 25. Second sector is actually media. Believe it or not, this is actually the widest trading IG sector presently. And, you know, there's just, you know, a lot of specific company actions taking place in this area, large cable companies spinning off its cable business. So, you know, we look for just, I think, more idiosyncratic events to take place in the media sector. And then finally, utilities. This is an interesting one where, you know, they've performed very strongly in 24, you know, based on the demand on the AI side. We expect, you know, good performance to persist, and issuance of fixed income securities, probably more so, and this is in Frank's world, in the hybrid securities area, into next year. So I think those three IG sectors are ones that we're focused on. And curve positioning, we also like that five-year part of the curve where you get benefit of duration without going out too far, you know, in maturity. Leslie, I could turn it back to you.
Yeah, that was a great summary. And one thing the tech bid that we've seen, or you've seen in IG, has been pretty rough. Not just from foreign demand, right? But pension funds are fully funded. You've had annuities rise. So you have insurance company demand, and you expect that. Particularly given that we don't think you're going to have this large decline in interest rates heading into 2025. So you expect the technical part of demand for corporates to really, you know, flow through into next year.
That's right. Yeah. You know, this yield level, again, being high on a percentile basis, we haven't seen it in a while, you know, coupled with the ingredients for just good performance, whether it's, you know, macro, Fed easing, fundamental strong intact. So I think that should keep investor demand strong for IG.
That's great, Barry. Thank you. And now we want to sort of move down a little bit of that credit spectrum, and Barry mentioned the hybrid, and you know, we want to go to the preferred side now, and Frank Vallejo, who leads the preferred efforts and, you know, publishes the Yield Income, which is an incredibly popular report within the Chief Investment Office into our clients. Listen, Frank, I know you work very hard, but let's be honest, you've had a spotlight sector this year. Okay, while Frank is a very hard worker, his sector has done incredibly well this year. So I want to ask you on that same tone, I mean, what have been the drivers of recap in a performance in 2024? And is there anything that we saw in November and that could alter that performance, particularly as we go over into 2025? So thanks very much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Leslie, and thanks for that setup. Yeah, 2024 has been a great year, and everything just kind of worked. Everything just went right. Everything that could go well went well for preferreds this year, which is a nice change from the last few years, which has not necessarily been the case. But all in all, preferreds have performed very well this year. Fairly steady gains month after month since April. And actually, those monthly gains accelerated in midsummer as the 10-year Treasury rate dropped below 4% in early August. And it kind of stayed there for a pretty long stretch of time. And that contributed to solid gains in August and September, gains to the tune of 2.5% to 3% in each of those 2 months. But that momentum hit a brick wall in October and November as rates rose sharply in the weeks leading up to and then following the election. The 10-year Treasury rate spiked by about 80 basis points in 8 weeks, closing at 4.45% on November 13th. So that really abruptly ended the five-month streak of gains that had begun in May of this year, and we've had some marginal losses since then. But nonetheless, as you mentioned, the sector has been a solid performer this year with year-to-date gains of about 10.5%. That includes an 11% gain for $1,000 par preferreds and a 10% return for the $25 par preferreds. And, you know, we came into 2024 looking for gains in the upper single digits, possibly double-digit returns for the sector, and we are on track with that target range, which is pretty good. And even if we look at performance on a trailing 12-month basis, we also see strong gains in the 12 months ending November 30th. The preferred sector returned more than 14%. That includes a 15% gain for the $1,000 pars and 13.6% for $25 par preferreds. Now, in terms of the outlook, returns from here are very likely to be much more subdued, and that's because the four pillars of support that have driven the preferred sector over the past year are not likely to provide the same degree of tailwind that they have over the past year. The primary drivers of preferred returns over the past year have been valuation, interest rates, fundamentals, and technicals. And in the past, I've referred to these as the four-legged stool of support for the preferred sector. But as we look ahead, those four performance drivers are not likely to provide the same level of support. First of all, valuations are less attractive than they were a year ago or at the start of the year. Looking at the 10-year Treasury rate, for example, the 10-year Treasury rate today is about 20 basis points higher than where it was at the start of the year, yet preferred yields are about 80 basis points lower. So clearly, relative valuations are just not as attractive. Secondly, the rate backdrop, it's going to remain benign. That's our expectation. We expect rates to generally trend lower over the next year, but not materially lower, as you mentioned, Leslie, in your opening comments, not materially lower. As a matter of fact, our CIO target for the 10-year Treasury yield 12 months from now is about 4%, so not too far below where we are currently. So rates are less likely to drive performance from here in the same way that they have over the past 12 months. On the other hand, the fundamentals remain supportive as the operating environment improves for the banking sector, and the latest quarterly results from the banking sector have supported that and have shown that. That's important because banks comprise a large component of the issuer composition for preferreds, and the operating environment has definitely improved given the changes in the interest rate backdrop. And also, the election results suggest a more favorable regulatory environment for banks. And then finally, technicals. Technicals remain strong, those supply-demand dynamics. And one of the things that has been an important trend this year has been the uptick in preferred calls and redemptions. Those calls and redemptions to continue to come in at a rapid pace. So on balance, I'd say we should expect more modest returns next year from the preferred sector, driven mostly by coupon income, similar to what Barry just mentioned with respect to investment grade. And we'll probably see more volatility in monthly returns driven by the potential rate volatility, Leslie, that you mentioned. However, there are still some opportunities to find good yield within the preferred space, particularly among discounted variable rate preferreds in the $1,000 par market. You know, in the wake of the pandemic lockdown period and the policy stimulus related to that time, and then the Fed's historic rate hiking cycle, we broke out of that low rate interest rate paradigm we had been locked into for much of the prior decade. But now, looking out over the next few years, it's very likely we're going to be in a higher relative rate backdrop overall. We'll probably have higher rates of inflation than we did in the prior decade, and a higher terminal Fed funds rate. And so the variable rate preferreds that were issued in that prior lower interest rate regime, many with lower relative coupons, are still trading at discounts. They're very likely to perform well going forward as they see their coupons reset higher and therefore supporting their prices and yields. And these discounted variable rate preferreds have offered some of the best total return opportunities within the preferred sector over the past year, and they continue to look particularly interesting. Many of these are among the recommendations we publish each month in a report called the Preferred Securities Top Picks, and the latest edition is entitled The Four-Legged Stool Revisited. So, Leslie, that's about where things stand.
Right. I appreciate that, Frank. That was a great summary. I wanted to ask you, Lou, Barry talked about the regional side, regional banks. How do you look at that in the preferred sector as a whole?
Yeah, things are definitely looking more interesting there as well. As a matter of fact, in addition to, I would say, within the sector and in terms of opportunities, that's another theme. I did mention the discounted variable rate preferreds offering some unique opportunities, but those preferreds, both variable rate, fixed rate, what have you, also are offering some interesting opportunities in that they are providing some additional yield premium. So, yeah, that there's some interesting spots to look at there.
That's great, Fred. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. And just to, as we sort of end this month's roundtable. In the first week and a half in January, we will have our fixed income strategist out, which covers a lot of these sectors, and everyone on this call is a large contributor to that publication, and that's where we will discuss our 2025 outlook. For that publication, we wait for January to actually discuss the outlook, only because, as we witnessed from last year, interest rates can move in the end of the year very quickly. But we will have that out on the first week of January. I'm sure everyone's comments that you've heard today will be in that publication as well. So I want to wish everybody a happy holiday, and we'll see you in about a month. And thank you for everyone that participated. Thanks very much.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.